Law Focus Podcast. Bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus.
Welcome to Law Focus, the show with the staunch focus on the law. My name is Basil Shirandai, and I am going to be your legal guardian for this evening. We are tapping right into a legal analysis on the Commission of Inquiry and Disciplinary Hearing of one Mr. Tom Moyane, who was a SARS commissioner. This show this evening looks at the fairness of those two proceedings happening parallelly or simultaneously, if one may argue. It is probed by an application that has been made by senior counsel Dalimpofu, who has taken a matter to court to argue that in actual fact, those two proceedings will work to the detriment, if not the unfairness, of one Mr. Tom Moyane. They will definitely prejudice him. That is the argument that he's making. He made that argument before the Commission of Inquiry, through also Mr. Mabuza, who is also a lawyer of Mr. Tom Moyane. And they also made the same argument before the disciplinary hearing to try and stay those proceedings. Both of these inquiries have actually made the same conclusions, and those conclusions have been the fact that this will not work to the detriment or unfairness of Mr. Tom Moyane, because of the fact that those two proceedings are actually probing two different issues, albeit that they are probing into the same conduct, or it may time and again intersect on Mr. Tom Moyane. Now, that argument rests on the sole basis of the nature of a commission of inquiry and the nature of these of a disciplinary inquiry. Those questions are going to be answered later in this show into understanding what is a commission of inquiry and what is a disciplinary hearing and how those two can coincide in this particular issue and why it is okay for them to happen at the same time. Now, a lot of people have argued that it's not okay because it's unfair on him, and others have argued that no, there's nothing wrong. It's actually a standard that one should understand that they will be held to should they occupy offices of public functionary. Now, Law Focus listener, this show will be probing into those issues. This evening we'll be speaking to experts who will be assisting us to answer those questions and to understand why that application has been dismissed before the disciplinary hearing and why it may be appealed and what are some of the findings or key findings that may or may not be made should it be appealed. Are there prospects of success or not? It's an open debate. Nonetheless, what is very important is to understand that there are also conducts that which are being probed by the Commission of Inquiry that which actually highlight how problematic it is to have corruption in the country. Thanks to Corruption Watch for some of the hard work that they've done around corruption in the country in many other areas, not including this one. And not only this one. There's also the Nglasana issue and many other issues that Corruption Watch have been highlighting, that there's actually a plague of corruption in the country. Law Focus listener, before we get into that, let's do the legal hotspots first. You're still listening to Law Focus.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week. Legal Hotspots.
Welcome back to Law Focus for the Legal Hotspots. For this week, we are looking at one of the most interesting three stories of the week. The first story looks at the judgment that which has been laid by the Concord with regards to Nglasana, who was the National Director of Public Prosecutions and had been removed by our former president, Jacob Zuma. So what happened here is that Mr. Sean Abrams is actually a predecessor of Mr. Mxolisi Nglasana, who was the National Director of Public Prosecutions. The former president, Mr. Jacob Kgatlehlekisa Zuma, actually removed allowed Mr. Nglasana to actually resign and therefore appointed Mr. Sean Abrams. Now, he was relying on certain provisions of the National Prosecution Act. And in those provisions, they provided that the president can actually have an NDPP removed on a certain amount or salary of some sort. And so they agreed on a 15 million rand, or 17 million rand in actual fact, that which was given to Mr. Nglasana for him to vacate his position. And therefore, Mr. Sean Abrams was actually now appointed later on. And so what Corruption Watch did with many other organizations, they went to court to go and argue that that particular provision of the NPA Act actually violates against the principle of independence, which is embedded in the Constitution, that which the National Prosecuting Authority ought to have. And so some of the most strongest arguments that were made by the court is that the former President Zuma was bent on getting rid of Mr. Nglasana by whatever means he could muster. His was an approach that kept on mutating. It was first a stick, then a carrot, a stick once more, and eventually a carrot. And it went on further to say that there was actually a golden handshake between Mr. Zuma and Mr. Nglasan. Now, later on, they go on to say that, in actual fact, what plainly evinces how desperate former President Zuma was to get rid of Mr. Nglasan is that this was followed by a draft settlement in which the amount was left blank. Mr. Nglasan was being told to pick whatever figure. And then actually the court went on to say under Justice Madlanga, that all I'm saying is that the very idea that former President Zuma was willing at least to consider whatever amount Mr. Nglasan inserted speaks volumes. To be more direct, it lends credence to the view that he wanted to get rid of Mr. Nglasan at whatever cost possible. And so later on, they go on to speak about the integrity of the NPA. So the inference is inescapable that Zuma was effectively buying Mr. Nglasan out of office. In my book, conduct of that nature compromises the independence of the office of the National Director of Public Prosecutions. Now, a lot of people have come out to say, well, in actual fact, when you have a president that is corrupt like that, you are bound to have those kind of situations where the president is trying to buy out a National Director of Public Prosecution who may, in all likelihood, investigate him or prosecute him for that matter. And then later on, they say that former President Jacob Zuma appointed Advocate Abrahams following his unlawful removal of Mr. Nglasan. That removal was an abuse of power. Advocate Abrahams benefited from this abuse of power, right? So it therefore matters not that he may not have been aware of the abuse of power. The rule of law dictates that the office of NDPP be cleansed of all these ills that have plagued it for the past few years. It would therefore not be just and equitable to retain him, at this would not vindicate the rule of law. So meaning that the appointment of Mr. Abrams, if it was constitutional and it was valid, therefore he would continue in office. But because the removal of Mr. Nglasan was not constitutional and valid, therefore, in all consequence, Mr. Abrams' appointment, Advocate Abrams' appointment, was also not constitutional. Now, that assists us to understand why now the court went on to give a remedy that which is not common, to go and say that because Mr. Nglasan has actually taken a golden handshake when he vacated his office, therefore he's not going to be reinstated for that very reason, because then the court concludes that he acted ultra vires. A remedy of reappointment will be given to whoever who actually acts and according to the law and within the law. So if he was removed forcefully, therefore he would be reinstated. But because he was not only removed forcefully, he took a golden handshake, therefore he's being removed from office. And so that is the strength of that case. The second story for the week looks at how the Competition Tribunal has actually refused an application to dismiss a complaint against companies accused of price fixing and tender collusion that has even involved over 240 million of an Eskom tender. Now, the tender was actually for supply, installation and dismantling of the scaffolding and thermal insulation for 15 Eskom coal-fired power stations, and actually was actually going to run for over 5 years. And so the tribunal actually has jurisdiction throughout South Africa and is actually adjudicates over matters of competition, including price fixing and so forth. And this complaint was actually lodged by Eskom, but it has been removed off the roll by the tribunal because the case has not been fully made. Now, that is the second story, but now that opens up many other issues, because that means that the tender will now have to be split or the bid will have to continue. We will let you know how that carries on. So for an exclusive, the NPA has actually declined to prosecute Mr. Tom Moyane for an alleged assault of a teenager. The suspended SARS commissioner, Tom Moyane, will not be prosecuted for the alleged assault of a 17-year-old girl who is a mother of his grandchild. The NPA has actually confirmed. Gauteng spokesperson has actually told News 24 and many other news outlets that prosecutors could see no prospects of a successful prosecution and decided not to pursue the charges. Yeah, there are a lot of questions around this issue. But those are the legal hotspots for the week. Law Focus listener, please stay in tune for us while we're going to be talking about Tom Moyane, the Commission of Inquiry and the Disciplinary Hearing. We'll be talking to experts here on the show. Please stay with us. This is Law Focus.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week. It's Legal Hotspots. Law Focus, handing you your rights.
We were also able to go to the ground to go and speak to most of you to get your opinion on how to deal with the issue on Tom Moyane. And most of you have actually given their input as to what they think about the Commission of Inquiry and the disciplinary hearing happening at the same time. And around most of the opinions, the main issue was more money is being spent. Huh, interesting. Let's just hear what they had to say.
So I don't think it's fair to have two inquiries to intervene on the matter. I feel like SARS should do the disciplinary hearing and should end there, because what's the point of doing two investigations that will have almost the same outcome? So if SARS does its job, investigate the issue properly, disciplines him fairly and according to the law, then I think that should be sufficient enough. What with the different in any disciplinary hearing, there's a person that's internally and externally, so it will be fair enough. And I feel like with the commission, it will have external people and internal people, so we're just wasting more money, more time on an issue that could be handled and move on and better the department or the SARS thing. It doesn't have to be like a whole drawn out thing. That's not the point of the issue. The issue is to deal with it at hand properly and get a resolution.
It's fair, because like in this country, we suffer a lot from corruption. So I think it will be a lesson from others also, so that like trying to minimize corruption. Yeah, it's fair. He has to face both of them.
In South Africa, we face a whole lot of corruption. So any type of move that is taken in order to eradicate corruption should be supported. So I think it's very fair, because in that way, we're approaching both situations, because he's wrong for both. So why must he only be charged for one when he's wrong for both? So yeah. Because why will they keep him there? Do they not think that he will carry on with his corruption without people finding out? He'll see where he went wrong and he'll fix that, but he'll carry on with corruption. For now, he should be suspended until they figure out whether he's guilty or not, and then they can take the decision to either dismiss.
I think it's fair. If you have a major corruption scandal, it's setting a precedent for everyone else. It's setting a standard of, are we just going to do this internally, discipline him internally and manage that, or are we going to actually show people that this is a major issue and you can't just... Corruption is something we're trying to defeat, so I think having both is important.
I think it's a good thing that Tom Moyane is facing disciplinary action, because as a country we cannot afford to be corrupt, because we really need to move forward as a society so that we can look after our fellow countrymen. I feel like they should be separate, because people might get their issues confused and it won't be as effective, but I feel that both of them are necessary to have. Facing a scandal should be dismissed until proven guilty, innocent or guilty. I feel like suspended is too much wasted money on somebody who's not doing their job at a particular time. So he should be dismissed, and then if he's found to be innocent, reinstated.
In one way, if he is actually corrupt and there is evidence of him being corrupt, then there is a good chance that like he'll be able to get off the charges, because there will be like power and around his like topic, and then corruption will carry on. But if we have fair people in charge of the trial and the hearing and everything else, then there is a good chance that it will be fair. But it really depends on if he has power over the people that are inquiring him.
Law Focus, handing you your rights.
Welcome back to Law Focus, the show with the staunch focus on the law. You're still sitting here with Basil Shirinda, and we are going to get into the crux of the matter. We're going to be interviewing Mr. Neville Gaula, who is an attorney at Maluleke Siriti Makume Matlala Incorporated, specializing in administrative and constitutional law. Welcome to the show, Mr. Gaula. Now, to kick off the conversation, where do the powers of appointing a commission of inquiry lie?
There's a specific section that in the Constitution empowers or mandates the President to make such an appointment. And in this case, Section 84.2F of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa empowers the President to appoint a commission of inquiry. Now, you would understand that the case for Mr. Tom Moyane, former commissioner at SARS, he is appointed in terms of a SARS Act by the president. It's not a normal employer-employee relationship that you would find, for example, a lecturer at Wits University and the university, or myself, where I am with my employer. It is regulated in law, this one specifically, and that is why the person that appoints and the person that dismisses is the president. And the reason for such a commission of inquiry is that there might be certain allegations leveled against the person concerned, and in this case is Tom Moyane, regarding certain administrative functions he ought to discharge given his position. And if the president is of the view that he is not discharging those responsibilities or those duties, he will then appoint a commission of inquiry. But obviously, you know, civil society will complain on certain things and what, bias, corruption, maladministration, and so on. So for him to clear the air in terms of whether or not those allegations are true, the only appropriate forum is to get to the bottom of it. It's a form of inquiry. And the inquiry in this case, its major role and function is to get to the bottom of the truth, whether those allegations are indeed true and correct.
And so what are the consequences of a commission of inquiry?
Once the commission, the president will then appoint a judge or whatever person who is fit to conduct that inquiry. Terms of reference will then be developed by the presidency to say, this is the scope of this inquiry, is to investigate one allegation, X, Y, and Z, and so on, report, make a finding, or make recommendations to me as the president. Then based on that, I will then decide whether or not Mr. Moyane, or any person for that matter in this position, is fit to hold such an office. Now, for him to come to that conclusion, evidence will have to be led of those allegations. Such evidence has been substantiated on facts. Witnesses have been called to lead such evidence or to substantiate that such evidence. But also Mr. Moyane, as a subject of that inquiry, will have an opportunity to cross-examine those witnesses to test the veracity of the information that they've given. And they will then have to, the commission or the commissioner will then have to present such facts to the president and make a finding after all witnesses, all evidence have been led, and make certain recommendations to the president. Then the president will then have to act. Let's take, for example, the commission in Moyane's case comes to a finding that, yes, indeed, he has failed to discharge his duties as required in terms of law. In other words, he has given certain rebates to certain individuals who are politically connected, who has given certain preferences, certain tenders of staff who are politically connected, and so on. And there's evidence to substantiate that. The president will be obliged to consider those and make a decision, for example, say, now, I think the relationship of trust is broken, and therefore I'm going to remove you from that position. But before he makes that, he will then have to give him an opportunity to respond to, say, to the issues that the president has raised or the decision the president has made. And based on that, the president will then take a decision on that. It either he's fired or there are no substance for the president to have acted on him based on the recommendations, based on the finding made by the commissioner in this regard. So the consequences are extremely dire if the allegations have been proven.
But it's not binding. It's not binding, Mr. Gaul.
It is not binding, because that commission has been established by the president. He has issued a proclamation, which is different than the binding nature of the recommendations and findings of the public protector. As we have known in the EFF 1 case and the EFF 2 case.
What is the nature and function of the disciplinary hearing in this particular?
The disciplinary hearing, there's an employee is expected to act in a particular way in discharging his or her duties and responsibilities in a work environment. There's a policy that regulates all employees in that environment. There's a policy that regulates what must be done under which circumstances and so on. If there's any transgression, you'll be called to account before a disciplinary hearing, where the charges will be formally placed before you, and you will have an opportunity, similar to inquiry, to refute those charges. The chairperson who's appointed, similarly in this case, the commissioner, will have to listen to the employer who has initiated those charges against you. And you as an employee, you will have to have an opportunity to discredit the evidence led by the employer or on behalf of the employer, by whoever. And then the chairperson of that hearing will have to make a finding or a determination on whether or not the charges that have been leveled against you as an employee, the employer has managed to prove them. That is the difference.
But that would be binding.
That would be binding. But then the normal legal process will then follow. Let's take a situation whereby the chairman is of the view that the employer has managed to prove the charges leveled against you in subordination or theft or whatever the case might be. And he is of the view that a sanction, which is a penalty that he imposes, is that of a dismissal or that of whatever the case might be, the employer will be bound by that. But you'll find in most cases, the employer, because of the nature of the offense that or the charges leveled against you, is not that of where a trust relationship is broken down. For example, theft in a financial company and so on.
Mm.
A charge of theft definitely would result to a breakdown of relationship between the employer and employee, and therefore the ultimate penalty will be dismissal in that case.
Mm.
But then what is key is what the process of the procedure that has been followed to come to that conclusion. Again, now your question of fairness comes into play.
Yeah.
But you can appeal or take the decision of the chairperson on review. In other words, you approach the CMA, which has a jurisdiction to hear that matter, and said the chairperson's decision was wrong in the following circumstances. He ignored these facts. He took account of these facts.
Mm.
And I mean, had he taken...
Mr. Gawula, let me push it further, because we are dealing with a special circumstance here of one individual who is facing inquiry in both forums. Now, the argument that is being leveled is that there is a form of unfairness by just having these two forums occurring simultaneously or concurrently. Now, I need to understand, what are your views in that regard?
There is nothing that stopped the president from proceeding with the inquiry as he has done so. That, look, I hear you. There's a matter that is pending. Therefore, can you hold this process until I clear my name on this process?
Before your process starts.
Yes. And the president said, look, I see no merit in your argument with respect to holding back on this process, because I have the power to appoint that, and I have the authority to determine whether or not you are fit to hold that position. The one of the disciplinary inquiry is a different process which you've got to face, because I did not hold you before that. It's got nothing to do with me. But then the question of fairness then comes into being, whether or not is it, would him going through those processes result into a unfair situation, given the fact that some of the facts or factors that might be goes before him might be similar in nature. So the process is, the president was then of the view when he dismissed his request to hold that look, those processes are different, and whatever material facts that will be placed in either of those processes, you have to respond to that. But what I am concerned is your responsibility as head of the South African Revenue Commission. That's what the president.
And I hear that argument, Mr. Gawula, but let's explore it further. The entire SARS department was run by Mr. Moyani, and he played a central role as to who did what, when, and how, and why. Especially in the, I'm talking particularly in management, as commissioners, and so most of those payments, including the 420 million that was paid to the Guptas, and some of the decisions that were made with KPMG, when he was the central guy, even though there were other commissioners who were participating with him, he was a central guy. So the odds are the entire commission will be centralized around Moyani. Can we agree on that?
The reality is that Mr. Moyani was not processing those payments himself.
Himself, yes, definitely, but he was central in those decisions.
That's one. Number two, was he party or part of the decision or to determine whether or not a taxpayer XYZ is entitled to a rebate or whatever the case might be?
Mm.
And the answer is no. He has management staff that were tasked and dealing with those things. His responsibility as head of the institution was that of a strategic position to see that SARS discharge its functions and collect the necessary revenue as required in law.
He's supposed to do that as required in law. But what has been led as allegations is that he was instrumental in all of those corruption deals, allegedly.
We cannot speculate until evidence is led and that those allegations are tested and proven.
So now it means that he is going to be involved in two inquiries that will be happening simultaneously.
Yes, and that is why the president was of the view that, look, whatever SARS disciplinary processes entails, it's not something that I'm concerned about. What I'm concerned about is what is in the interest of the public. And what is in the interest of the public would be to give you an opportunity to dispel or to disprove the allegation level in a public forum as a head of a very important institution that collects revenue. Because I am of the view that the only platform for you to state what you know, what you say you are fit and proper person to head that unit, would be have to ventilate it in a commission of inquiry. On the same breath, the charges in the DC relates not only to him, but to other officials whom he worked with, whom in one way or the other might come up and say, I got instructions from the commissioner to do X, Y, and Z. Commissioner was not involved in this thing.
Because
as a matter of fact, when you say someone is instrumental, did he take the decision? Did he process those things? Did he press the payments and so on? And the answer is no, because that's not his duty.
But if he abused his power, then he's definitely instrumental.
The abuse of power, we can't just use that term loosely.
Mm.
The abuse of power is that the powers that you're given to you in law, you were using such powers for other ulterior or personal self-preserved interests. And for someone making that allegation, he or she must lead evidence, must produce facts to substantiate that allegation.
Yeah, that we understand. I think that is a substantive. Those are the substantive issues. My issue is not the substantive issues.
Mm-hmm.
My issue is, whilst these processes are happening at the same time, mm-hmm. when Mr. Moyane has to be reporting to a DC and at the same time has to go and report to a commission of inquiry, isn't there mm-hmm. something problematic there about his focus, about him being one human being responding to two inquiries at the same time? I think that is something that there's something problematic about it somehow.
Look, Dalimpofu is seen, his arguments is that, look, Mr. President, hold on this commission until
we are done with
the
this
outcome of the disciplinary process.
Definitely.
Because the evidence is going to be laid there and he needs to present himself, he needs to answer, and so on. It does sound like a double-edged approach.
So
on his part.
Yeah.
And also the question of fairness comes into being. But the way our legal system is structured, he has options. Is to approach a competent court of law and say, how do I present myself on both processes, which are not the same necessarily?
In principle.
But in principle, but the outcomes might be identical and the issues to be ventilated might be identical. And the court would likely rule in his favor to say, look, let him face the inquiry, or let him face the DC, whichever the way. But he can't be at two places at the same time.
That's all I'm arguing. That's all I'm arguing, Mr. Kaula.
Yes, he can't be at the place at the same time. But let's allow the court process to make that determination.
That decision, yeah.
Because he's of the view that his rights have been violated, in the sense that he's been subjected to two separate processes where the issues might be similar or identical and the outcomes might give credence to each other.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gaula. That is Mr. Neville Gaula, who is an attorney at Maluleke Siriti Makume Matlala Incorporated, specializing in administrative and constitutional law. Thank you for your invaluable contribution this evening.
Thank you, sir.
You're still listening to Law Focus.
Listening to Law Focus? Connect with VAR-FM 88.1 on Twitter and Facebook. Be your own lawyer. Law Focus. Point of information.
Welcome back to Law Focus. We're still probing the issue of Mr. Tom Moyane and the Commission of Inquiry and his disciplinary hearing, as the two inquiries have actually had people up in ears, trying to understand why is it that we should have two proceedings at the same time. Right on the line, we'll be speaking to Mr. David Lewis, who's an executive director of Corruption Watch, and we'll be underpinning from the ground the kind of corruption conduct that which is found in that commission of inquiry, but also trying to understand these two inquiries. Mr. Lewis, please welcome to Law Focus. To start the conversation right at the heart of everything, what is the commission of inquiry about, and what is being chiefly investigated?
So the commission into SARS is a commission basically, as I understand it, inspired by the very poor performance of SARS in recent years, as measured by them not meeting the revenue targets that were set. That was what the investigation is about. It's also been asked to investigate specific problematic areas, the one being the alleged corruption perpetrated by senior SARS official Jonas Makwakwa and the commissioner's response or lack of response to that. And it's also being asked to investigate issues related to VAT refunds to Gupta family-connected businesses. So it's quite a wide-ranging investigation, but it mostly concerns the performance at SARS and, as I say, some specific events that are identified as particularly potentially problematic in SARS.
So what are some of the chief elements of prosecution in the dossier brought before the commission?
It's an investigation into the conduct of the office. Two particular act that I meant that I remember that they are investigating. And it's not a prosecution, it's an investigation. Only the prosecuting authority can prosecute. It's an investigation, as I say, into the performance of SARS, and it's an investigation of certain areas that have been brought, certain issues that have been brought to the attention of the Commission and the attention of the public. And two that I recall are the question of irregular, allegedly irregular VAT payments made to Gupta-related companies, and then two, the possibility that a senior SARS official is engaged in corrupt activities, certainly in suspicious transactions, and an investigation into the response of SARS to those suspicious transactions.
With these kinds of cases being investigated, could it mean that we have made progress as a country in terms of investigating corruption cases or even combating them?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that we have made progress. I mean, since the Ramaphosa administration has been in place, you know, there have been significant steps taken, you know, reconstituting the boards of state-owned enterprises like Eskom, Transnet, and Denel represent significant progress. Getting rid of several clearly corrupt cabinet ministers has been a step in the right direction. And the action taken in respect of SARS and in respect of the National Prosecuting Authority represents considerable progress. I mean, it's only a matter of, what is it now, 5 months or something since we removed an absolutely corrupt head of a government in South Africa, of our government in South Africa. And these things take time, but I think that there are many corrupt elements left in many institutions like SARS, Eskom, Transnet, the National Prosecuting Authority, the police. So these things take time, and they're not easy, but I think that things are being done. Never enough, but progress is being made.
The NPA has actually decided not to prosecute Tom Moyane for the alleged assault on a woman. What are some of your views on that?
Well, you know, you cite one of the many cases. I mean, the one case is the manner in which he dealt with the allegations involving the person who was effectively second in command, Jonas Makwakwa. We have laid criminal charges against both Moyane and Makwakwa in respect of those transactions. And, you know, the NPA go backwards and forwards as to telling us whether they are or are not investigating them. But we would certainly institute a private criminal prosecution, particularly in the case of Moyane's transgressions. The other that you mentioned is his alleged assault on a young woman that is said to have taken place at his home. I obviously only know what I read in the newspapers about that, and I am puzzled that he wasn't investigated. Except to say that Moyane has this network that is the Hawks, the NPA, and SARS has been one that has effectively protected Moyane all along. You know, I don't doubt that he would be investigated for and prosecuted for certain acts that he's alleged to have undertaken a long time ago had he not been part of the whole state capture project, which is, I think, exactly, and I think he's been a key figure in the state capture project. And so his fellow conspirators, you know, in the presidency as it previously, the presidency in the previous administration in the NPA and the Hawks have, you know, in all likelihood conspired to ensure that he doesn't get prosecuted. That's been a common feature of the Zuma administration.
Do you think it is fair on Tom Moyane that he has two concurrent proceedings probing into the same conduct?
I don't think that's correct. The one investigation, the Nugent investigation, is an investigation into SARS. Because he was head of SARS, or he is head of SARS, now suspended, you know, inevitably he will be part of that investigation. But it's essentially an investigation into SARS, and one that is, you know, much more broad-ranging than the allegations that are being adjudicated in the disciplinary procedure. But, you know, I don't think that there's any question of fairness or unfairness involved. The one concerns his position directly. The other is a broad and very large examination of the performance at SARS.
With the kind of systemic corruption and organizational culture that has been alleged to have underpinned Moyane's leadership, what can be done in future to provide assistance to aggrieved employees who may not have the power to stop such a figure?
Well, you know, what has been, you know, one of, you know, many of the things that need to be done have been done. So Moyane has been suspended. A new interim leadership has been put in place at SARS. And I would hope that these two investigations have commenced, the one a disciplinary inquiry following his suspension, the other an investigation into the performance of SARS, both of which in their different ways will be very revealing, the one of which may result in disciplinary action being taken against Moyane, the other will guide interventions and policies that need to be introduced to restore SARS to its former glory and status. So much has been done. I mean, I would hope that the new management of SARS, or temporary interim management of SARS, will be taking seriously what their employees are saying to them. I mean, the real, you know, challenge, many people were driven out of SARS. Many good people were driven out of SARS or resigned from SARS. And I would hope that every effort is being made to bring some of those people back into the fold, because they represented some of the most important, competent and experienced managers there.
In closing, Mr. Lewis, is there anything that you want to add to the conversation thus far?
But Moyane has been a very damaging influence on the whole of South Africa. I mean, I don't know if you remember the Rogue Unit report, where he initiated the investigation, the ultimately criminal investigations of Pravin Gordhan, by conniving with KPMG to produce a doctored report that seemed to suggest that Pravin Gordhan was involved in criminal activities in SARS. That was a completely fabricated report in an attempt to get rid of the Minister of Finance. So he's been a very, very damaging, toxic, destructive influence in, you know, one of the most important economic institutions in the country. So, you know, we need to clear this up, and frankly, I think we need to clear him out as quickly as possible.
Thank you very much for your invaluable contribution this evening.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
You're still listening to Law Focus.
Listening to Law Focus? Connect with VowFam 88.1 on Twitter and Facebook. Be your own lawyer. Law Focus.
The families of the 134 Life as a Dimini victims actually have received compensation from the Gauteng provincial government. We are glad that the arbitral awards that which have been given by the former Deputy Chief Justice, Dikango Moseneke, have actually came to life, and we are seeing movement in that regard. The interesting thing is that the Gauteng Premier, David Makhura, has actually said that the Office of the Premier has actually paid out 159 million to all of the 134 claimants.
Law Focus. Talking active citizenship. Law Focus on VowFam 88.1. Point of information.
Welcome back to Law Focus, and you're still sitting with Basil Shirenda. We're still live on air, and we're discussing the Commission of Inquiry that is being held by Justice Nugent on the entire SARS space, and including Tom Moyane. Right on the line, we have Mr. Theo Mapeto to provide us with an analysis on the current issues that which surround Tom Moyane and his the Commission of Inquiry and the disciplinary hearing. Mr. Theo Mapeto is the founder of Mapeto Attorneys. Not to drag it quite further, welcome to the show, Mr. Mapeto.
Thanks for inviting me, Bezo. I hope you're well.
Thank you. We are at the heart of understanding accountability, transparency in government, and these principles underpin the Commission of Inquiry that is currently underway to understand what are some of the dealings that which have been held by the South African Revenue Services when Tom Moyane was the chair therein, and some of the commissioners that which have been dismissed and under his watch. Now, Mr. Mapeto, there's a Commission of Inquiry that is currently underway, but there's also a disciplinary hearing, right?
Yes.
Now, these two processes are looking into the conduct of the said Mr. Tom Moyane, alleged of some of the alleged behavior and so forth. There's a dossier on hand. Now, from your understanding, what is the need to have both of these two sittings? I think that's where we should start.
You see, Bezal, we've got to be crystal clear so that we don't conflate the issues.
Yeah.
I have seen some in the media falling into the trap of conflating the issues. The Commission of Inquiry is appointed by the President in terms of the provisions of the Constitution, Section 84, and I think subsection 2.
Mm.
It provides the President with the powers to appoint a Commission of Inquiry. The disciplinary hearing is a different matter altogether. The Commission of Inquiry, let me exhaust the Commission of Inquiry.
First.
It looks into the affairs. If you look at the Gazette that came out to appoint the Commission of Inquiry, it looks into the totality of the affairs of the South African Revenue Services at a particular time.
Mm.
Whereas the disciplinary hearing only relates to the former commissioner, Mr. Tom Moyane.
Mm.
So the two issues are not necessarily the same, but they tend to overlap, granted.
And so what is the status thereof? What is the status of the Commission of Inquiry when it concludes?
Well, that is something that you get when you read the law. And the Commission of Inquiry is a quasi-judicial body.
Mm.
It has the powers to recommend to the President or to the Premier, whatever the case may be, to make certain recommendations to the President. But the President is not necessarily bound by the recommendations. He may say yay or nay to the recommendations. So the Nugent Commission of Inquiry is not concluded.
Mm.
Upon finalization of the proceedings, former Judge Nugent would then finalize a report and then make recommendations to the President. The President has a discretion to adopt the recommendations or not.
And so, what would be the consequences of the disciplinary hearing should it conclude?
Well, like I said, that's a different matter. The purpose, as I understand, of the disciplinary hearing is to provide certain allegations, to lay certain allegations against Mr. Moyane. Mr. Moyane has legal representation, from what I know. He will face the commission as an accused. If the chairperson of the disciplinary inquiry finds him guilty, then there are certain consequences that would naturally follow. If he's not found guilty, then automatically he would be reinstated to his position as a commissioner of SARS. So the scope, just to clarify, the scope of the Commission of Inquiry, as I understand, is very narrow, very limited to the conduct of Mr. Moyane as it relates to his employment in the South African Revenue Services.
That is the Commission of Inquiry.
That is the Commission of Inquiry.
And the much narrow
responsibility that it has.
And what would be the responsibility of the DC?
The DC looks into Mr. Moyane's conduct, and if he's found guilty, and then those consequences would follow. He might be dismissed, he might be suspended, and so on and so forth. That is the DC, right?
Yeah, that's they look into one person.
If he's not found guilty, then he might be reinstated in that position. Now, to be clear, that is as far as the disciplinary inquiry goes.
And its findings are binding?
The findings are binding because the commissioner or the chairperson of the proceedings is appointed to chair the proceedings. And he might, like I'm saying, he might find Mr. Moyane guilty or not.
Yes. And then on the commission of inquiry, on the other hand?
The commission of inquiry, on the other hand, a quasi-judicial process that is chaired by former Judge Nugent. It's the one which may make recommendations to the president, which recommendations, as I said, may be adopted by the president or may not be adopted by him.
And so now, looking at both of these proceedings concurrently happening, wouldn't there's a concern, I think, that is raised by senior counsel Mpofu there, that these two proceedings are actually working to prejudice Mr. Moyane to the extent that they're looking at conduct that which is concurrent. Now, and he advises a procedural fairness argument there. What would be your response to that?
Well, you need to look no further than the ruling of Judge Nugent. And Judge Nugent rejected out of hand the line of argument that was adopted by senior counsel Mpofu. He is of the view that although the two processes overlap, they do not necessarily impede each other. Judge Nugent is of the opinion that Mpofu is misconstruing the law with regard to this particular question. So in his view, there's nothing that prohibits the Commission of Inquiry from proceeding because, as the judge has held in his ruling, the Commission of Inquiry scope is much, much wider.
Now, I understand that line of argument around the scope being wider with the Commission of Inquiry and being much narrower with the DC. But now, Dalimpofu is actually challenging that. He's saying that to the extent that the entire SARS Commission, the entire SARS South African Revenue Services was being run by Mr. Moyane, and therefore to an extent, the very essence of the Commission of Inquiry is centered around Moyane. Right? That's his argument, that if you were to look at the entire dossiers, all the dossiers do not go by without mentioning Moyane in all of them. And therefore, that means to a very, very large extent, the conduct that which is being scrutinized here is that of Mr. Moyane, which is the same thing that basically the DC is doing, well, with different consequences. That is argument.
Look, Basil, the common refrain of your question is to a certain extent. You've said to a certain extent several times, which means that you want to qualify that. In fact, Judge Nugent has conceded that. To a certain extent, Mr. Moyane, as a common denominator, is a prominent feature in both these proceedings. But it doesn't mean that the one displaces the other. So, put differently, it may very well be that the Commission of Inquiry looks, and in fact it's a given, the Commission of Inquiry looks into other affairs, whereas the Commission of Inquiry sole mandate is to look into the conduct of Mr. Moyane as it relates to his employment.
And there's nothing puzzling for you about that?
No. I think the judgment or the ruling from Judge Nugent is quite clear. I mean, it provides in detail the reasoning behind the ruling. And what is interesting about the ruling is that he met head on every argument, every line of argument that Mr. Mpofu made.
I saw the five lines of argument. Mr. Mapeto, I'm still uncomfortable to the extent that the DC could have proceeded whilst the Commission of Inquiry was stayed its proceedings, right? Or stayed the proceedings of the DC make the factual findings in the Commission of Inquiry, use some of the factual findings for the DC or the other way around, but not to make the same lines of arguments in both proceedings that are proceeding at the same time.
But you see, the difficulty with that argument is that the processes are different. Now, let me make a common example. If somebody is charged with a criminal offence, and it so happens that the employer is of the view that that offence is something that the employer disapproves of. So for instance, you get charged of theft as an employee. Now, there are two processes that may unfold in consequence of that. One, you may be charged by the police, which may mean that you have a criminal offence. You go to the criminal court. And two, you may be charged, as they put it colloquially, you may be charged departmentally, which would mean it's a labor law issue.
Matter. Yes.
Now, those two processes may run parallel to each other. At the same time. In fact, if you might find this interesting, it may very well be that you are found guilty in one process and acquitted in another.
But Mr. Mapeto, what is the likelihood that you will be found guilty in a criminal court and found not guilty in a civil court? What is the likelihood?
Well, the common example for those who are interested in the study of law is the O.J. Simpson matter.
Yes.
In the United States. It's a different jurisprudence, but the example is telling. So in our jurisprudence, for instance, we look at the question of standard of proof.
Yeah.
Now, in the labor law context, the standard of proof is much lower than that which is utilized in the criminal proceedings.
Definitely.
The standard of proof in the former proceedings is on a preponderance of probabilities or on a balance of probabilities, whereas in criminal proceedings the state has to prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt. So obviously that already tells you that the outcomes may be different, precisely because of the burden or the standard of proof that has to be involved.
Yes, Mr. Mapeto. Now, my argument is, should you be found guilty in a criminal case where the standard is higher than a civil case, what is the likelihood that you will be found not guilty in a civil court?
We call them courts of law, but they're essentially courts of evidence. The
yes.
presiding officer, who would be presiding in either matter, would have to be swayed by the evidence that he or she has in front of them. So if a presiding officer in case A, for instance,
in a criminal case,
is swayed by the evidence that is put forth by the state, then that may happen. That may very well happen. But the key point to bear in mind is that these processes are independent of each other. If you come from that premise, then you'd understand that you can't conflate the two. They're independent of each other. You may very well, I suppose, as you are going higher, if you want to review the proceedings, you may very well look into that and use that as one of the grounds of review. But as it stands, the two processes are independent of each other, and they should be viewed and treated as such.
Yeah, but from your opinion, do you see it succeeding or you don't see it succeeding?
Well, you know, I've got to concede that I looked at the proceedings very closely, starting from the Commission for Inquiry, and I'm swayed by the reasoning of Judge Nugent, for one. Where I'm standing, and I'm talking about this without the benefit of taking instructions from Mr. Muyani, because I'm not his lawyer. I think he might have a case. He might have a case going forward. It's always best for higher courts to clarify the law. I mean, that's why you have a hierarchy of courts in this country.
Is it always best, though, Mr. Mabed? Is it always best to have a clarification of the law? Or sometimes it's in a certain context of a case, you don't want to ruin your chances. You might as well settle out of court.
I'm a firm believer that it's not healthy for all parties and for all citizens if the law is in a state of flux.
Okay.
So if you have conflicting decisions, for instance, I've always preferred that you go to a higher court so that the law is tried and the law is clarified. So I'm hoping, and I'm crossing my fingers in this regard, I'm hoping that Muyani would exercise his right to go to a higher court.
Thank you, Mr. Mopeta, for that analysis. We are quite grateful to for that.
Much appreciated.
You're still listening to Law Focus.
Law Focus on BALFM 88.1, Point of Information.
Welcome back to your Point of Legal Information here at VAW FM 88.1, Vets Radio Academy. You're still on Law Focus, and you're still talking to Basil Shirinda about the Tom Moyane Commission of Inquiry at Disciplinary Hearing. What we've learned from today is an understanding on the principles of Commission of Inquiry, Disciplinary Hearing. The President, in his executive powers, appoints certain people and therefore can recall them through Commission of Inquiry to try and investigate into allegations which may lead into dismissals and so forth, to try and find if someone is fit and proper for that particular position. The essence of it is that in this particular case, the difficulty was fairness and having two proceedings happening at the same time, disciplinary hearing. And we look forward to seeing how that will pan out. Law Focus listener, you will hear from this, from Law Focus, how that actually panned out. From us here at Law Focus, remember that we still care about you and we bring you law and we focus on the law for you to be able to focus on that law. From our producer, Ms. Bulali Diakobu, who made the whole show possible, from our technical production, who makes sure that you can hear me. And from me, if it's not legal, then it's unlawful. If it's unlawful, then it's wrong. This is Law Focus. It's law and it's serious. From me, Basil Shirinda, have a great evening.
Listening to Law Focus? Connect with VAWFM 88.1 on Twitter and Facebook. Be your own lawyer. Law Focus Podcast.